Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. What a great weekend, huh? What a great weekend. The Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Farmers and Farmers. We've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player to help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers.
All right, so look, we don't put all of the blame on the feet of the losing quarterbacks, nor do we give all of the credit to the winning quarterbacks, right? I mean, if you go through all of these games, there actually is kind of an interesting parallel, right? There honestly is, at least in three of them especially, maybe even four. The ability to run and stop the run, it's so funny. Like, we completely forgot about all of that. We're like, it's a passing league. But the Kansas City Chiefs dominated the Colts because they could run the football and stop the run. And really, like, the Chiefs, who had no defense to speak of up until, I don't know, now, suddenly had one. What a great Saturday in Kansas City in that cold weather it was for Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. But the story of that game was the defense more than the offense. It's not that we didn't know their offense was good and had some explosive players. It was, are you kidding me? They got a defense now too? Continuing on with Saturday, what's the defense in the Rams and the Cowboys game? Right? Rams could run it, Cowboys couldn't. Which brings us to, and then, you know, you look at New England yesterday, and yes, Tom Brady was fantastic, but the game plan of power running football, the use of Rob Gronkowski, who showed his versatility as a blocker more than a pass catcher. He just ran the ball right at and right through the Chargers, who looked like the moment was just too big for them. And then while the Saints, it was not like they're a prodigious running team, and they did really benefit greatly from Alshon Jeffrey dropping a pass that he should have caught for a first down, and the Eagles being in great position to win that game. The fact is that the Eagles struggled to run the football, which made their offense struggle more than they usually did. But I love the idea last week when the Cowboys won, and Dak threw a couple of great balls in the second half, but wasn't all that consistent in terms of his accuracy. You had people saying, look, you know, it's not that pretty, but he's a winner. Okay, well, if the end-all be-all of every Dak Prescott discussion is he's a winner, why aren't we having that discussion now? And while you can sit there and tell me, well, he was the better quarterback because of the stats, dude, there were eight guys in that box the entire time. They dared the Cowboys to throw the football, and there were times in which Dak was just not accurate enough. You want to know a winner? Tom Brady is a winner. You guys aware of this? 19 years as starting quarterback, 13 times he's been in the AFC Championship game. That's obscene. That's just obscene. And we so often want to go against the common thought within the professional sports league, right? That Dak Prescott's fine. He's not great. He's not terrible. He's fine. No, you guys don't get it. He's better than fine. He's great. Then when asked to be great, he cannot. He does not have that competitive greatness within him. It's the same thing where the league, though, it's gone too much in the let's find the next Sean McVay. Like, there's something to the Sean McVay thing, and it's not just the play calling and the relationship with the quarterback. He's the whole package. It's the whole package. That's a good Dallas Cowboys team. That's a really good one. And they saw the speed at linebacker, the speed on defense, and said, you know what, let's line up and let's just mash them. And that's exactly what they did. With one star running back and C.J. Anderson, who was signed off the street and looked like he was on the street. Like, he looked more like, remember Tolbert, the little running back with the Carolina Panthers when we went to the Super Bowl? That's what he looked like. You want to know a winner? Tom Brady's a winner. This is what, like, the all-time greats do this. And we talked about this the entire season. Like, look, I don't want to declare him dead, but boy, do they look old. But boy, have they changed to being a power-running team, and I don't want to play him in January. Like, I don't know. Well, the Patriots hurt us. Don't believe me? Here's Brady after the game.
AFC Championship game, and it's a rematch against Kansas City. This time, though, in Arrowhead. What can we expect from that one?
It'll be a good game. They're a good team, and we played them earlier this year. You know, I know, you know, everyone thinks we suck and, you know, can't win any games, so we'll see. It'll be fun.
Now, listen, I've sat next to Rob Parker. I've worked with Nick Wright. Like, you name it, and they're not wrong in that. They're not wrong in the fantasy football aspect of it, in the foot race aspect of it. This is layup line basketball. Let me give you the best parallel you're ever going to get, okay? That there are people who, you go to a basketball game and you watch a team play in layup lines or in the airport, but layup lines. You want one team's dunking and they look great and they're passing, they're clapping, they're doing that. Right? They're doing the clapping. They're whooping. The other team's just doing layups, just shooting jump shots, just getting ready. And you walk into the gym, you're like, that team at that end, that's the one I'm going with. And then you watch a little bit more closely, and the other team is a little bit more locked in. They're fist bumping each other, but they have like a laser-like focus. They look a little bit older, they look a little bit wiser, and all of a sudden they start spreading you out and cutting you up, screening you. Next thing you know, open three, whap. You decide to stay home, throw it in the post, they get a little post up, kind of a little funky hook shot, but it goes in. They're gapping you defensively. Every time you cut, they're putting a forearm in your chest. They're being physical, but not dirty, but to the point of, hey, are they being dirty? This is, I mean, look, the Chargers were like USA basketball and the Patriots were like Argentina. Just find a way to win that game, exploit the weakness, and put the pressure on the other team that hasn't been there before, playing as a team together, and they collectively collapsed. Like, look, what we're telling you about Dak, what we're telling you about Foles, and, you know, Foles wasn't great yesterday. Second interception, absolutely not on him. And he does get rid of it quicker, which does have some benefits, but some of it's because he can get a little bit jittery back there as opposed to Wentz, who might hold it a tick too long, but there's some benefit to that as well. Like, look, what we're telling you about Dak and we're telling you about Foles is, this thing is not about one game here, one game there, winning a game, losing a game. It's about the ability to do it time and again, not just based upon having a better game plan, but can you make a play and can you make the right throw and the right read at the right time? And Brady just consistently does it, and the best consistently do it. I think Foles is one of the top five people in the NFL. Like, what I see from the Eagles in the loss, there's a video now of Doug Peterson waiting for every player before they go into the locker room. There's, of course, the video we saw yesterday in the still photos of Nick Foles going over to Alshon Jeffrey and consoling him. Like, as far as people are concerned, like, I know Nick a little bit. I know people who know him. They're like, he's the real deal as a guy. But Carson Wentz is a better quarterback. You can't solely judge based upon wins and losses. The perfect example is Nick Foles played good enough to win yesterday against Drew Brees. He did. He was leading them on what looked like a game-winning drive. Plenty of time on the clock. Had plenty of time to throw. Threw it to his best player, open over the middle. They would have been right there in the red zone. Chance to win the game. Does it mean they would have won it? No. But it put them in what felt like great position. But just like you can't judge Foles based upon the previous week when he really didn't play well against the Bears in the win, let's not judge him on this week. You judge guy based upon the overall body of work and what you see and what the league thinks. The same is true with Dak Prescott. They have to do so many things in Dallas to make Dak Prescott look like a star when he's just fine. I didn't say he's terrible. He's okay. He's mediocre. Right there in the average category. Whereas Tom Brady, sure, at this point in time, he needs a masterful game plan. But when given the opportunity with throws, it feels like he always delivers. It just does. So there's something to the ability to consistently win. And while we can't judge based upon one game or here or there, right? Like Brady, guys at his feet both times against the Giants in the Super Bowl, still had a chance to win both of those games, by the way. I mean, like, look, if we want to really judge wins and losses, it's okay. They should have maybe lost to Seattle, but that was after a Tom Brady drive. But if David Tyree doesn't catch the ball against his helmet, or if Wes Welker catches a ball that hits him in the fingertips, he might not have lost those two Super Bowls. Right? Like last year, if you want to put it on Brady because he fumbled when they're down five, that's fine. But he didn't miss the extra point, and his team never punted. Think about that. Like you just can't put everything on one player in a sport where 46 guys are active. Is he more responsible than any other player? Yeah, I'll go with that. But the Dak Prescott is a winner because he won the week before would make him a loser this week. That makes no sense. He wasn't terrible. He wasn't great. He misses throws by a greater margin than he should, considering how many credit hours he has in the NFL. Guys, throws are constantly high or low or left or right, and the reads aren't as fluid as the best in the game. But he can, in fact, run it. He does have value. He is versatile. He is tough. He is a good leader. But just like you can't lump him in as a great quarterback because they won last week, you can't kill him because they lost this week. And the same is true for Foles. It's about consistency of performance. It's about the ability to deliver. And while I don't give Brady all of the credit this weekend, that's about an organization understanding and evolving throughout the season. Here's who we are. Here's how we're going to win. Laying in wait, getting as healthy as possible, executing the game plan to, you know, there were some mistakes there, but as close to perfection as possible. And beating a super talented team in the Chargers who, if you looked at layup lines, and you're like, damn, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen and Melvin Gordon and Phillip Rivers and Derwin James and Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. You're like, dude, that team in layup lines, I'm taking them. Meanwhile, the Patriots are down there working on their screening, their passing, their cutting.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He is an all-pro, and even more importantly, he's the better of the two brothers, right? That's really, Mitchell Schwartz joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show of the Kansas City Chiefs. There's nothing like the love and support of family, and your brother Jeff, who of course, he guest hosts on Fox Sports Radio, and he has this deal on the Action Network, and he's big on social media, and he is your biggest fan and defender, but how often have you let him know over the last couple weeks that you are, in fact, still in the league and an all-pro, and he is covering you as a member of the media?
I don't have to do that too much. I think it's kind of an understood thing at this point, but it's great to have him out there as publicist, hype man, however you want to call it. It's cool to have a lot of support on social media from him.
Yeah, like, look, if you're the heavyweight champion of offensive linemen, he is your guy holding the belt coming in saying the champ is here, right? That's essentially his role, and it's a pretty fun role for him to have. Okay.
We need to get him some better clothes if that's the case.
That's also true. And some gold chains and maybe some sort of funny hat. So you get ready for your plan on Saturday, and you wake up Saturday morning, and you knew weather was going to be, everyone knew there was going to be a snowstorm. What does an offensive lineman from Southern California think when you wake up and you see the white stuff on the ground when you're driving to work Saturday?
So we think it's great. I mean, I've been out of Southern California for a few years now, and it got me pretty acclimated to the snow. So I just think like an offensive lineman now, and for us it's great. I mean, pretty much anything that happens weather-wise, it can slow down the field. Typically works in our favor, a little bit worse footing for the defensive line, not quite as much get off from them. So from the selfish offensive line perspective, we're always digging it. And, I think we showed that you're still able to throw the ball pretty effectively too. And of course, having Pat back there makes that pretty easy for us. But, I never played in a true snow game. Jeff had one, game, and he always talked about that, and it was exciting. And so the snow, it snowed like all night, all morning, and then right about game time, kind of let up a little. So I feel like I haven't played in a true snow game yet.
Have you heard about this weather forecast for this weekend?
I have. Some of my Southern California family members that are coming into town have heard about it too, and aren't quite as pleased about it as I think I am. But we have a game either last year or 2 years ago that was 1 degree at kickoff. So I think this game will be slightly warmer, just by a couple degrees.
So what is, you know, like, it's hard for us to, I would never go to a game like that. I'm just telling you, like, I don't think I would ever go, but you have to go, you have to play. Like, do you feel it? I mean, your face is obviously not covered, but you got a helmet on, you know, you can load up with layers. Like, how much of the cold do you actually feel when you're playing?
So you probably feel it the least, because you're obviously kind of the most cared for, and people are taking care of you. So when you're on the field, you're running around, you're moving, it's not too bad. You come off to the bench, you get heated benches, they have those, you know, capes or pullover jacket things for you. You get underneath one of those, and then come in for that heated bench, and just overall body heat from having played. It's not too bad. I think the worst for us is, you know, during a timeout or during a stoppage and play where you're out in the middle of the field, kind of standing around in the huddle. The wind kicks up. I mean, the wind chill is going to be much worse than, you know, any actual temperature. So when you're standing in the middle of the field, not much is going on, wind kicks up. For us, that's the coldest. And like you said, I mean, those fans, man, it's crazy to see them out there and playing in the cold. And yeah, I don't know how they do it. It just shows the passion that our fans have.
Yeah, I mean, they're unbelievable fans. Of course, they hadn't been a home playoff win since 93. What did it mean to get off to that hot start, right? You got the ball. Defense gets a stop. You guys get the ball. Five plays later, touchdown. Then, you know, another three and out. And then eight plays, 70 yards, a touchdown. To go up 17-0 to start the game, considering how much kind of how last year went, really. What did that mean to this team?
Yeah, you know, I think we had the confidence all week going into the game that, you know, we kind of saw that happening a little bit, and a lot of the media stuff obviously was, you know, Coastal Lion and going against our defense and the snow conditions, and that's going to favor, you know, like we talked about earlier, favors the offensive line just with how well they're playing, that it could be a bad matchup for us. But, you know, defense is pretty solid in there, and that defensive line especially, I mean, they can get to the passer like no one else in the league. So, you know, we had a good feel for those guys being able to continue doing that. And, you know, offensively, I mean, no one had really talked about the matchup between our offense and their defense. And, you know, our offense is pretty special, and we got some pretty good guys on our side. So we had all the confidence in the world that if we went out there, you know, we could kind of do our thing. And obviously we would have liked to score some more points in the second half there and, you know, make that a little bit easier game on the back end. But it was big for us. I mean, it's big for the team to go out and get up, you know, 14-0, 17-0, and it's early first half. And, you know, everyone's feeling good, and the confidence level definitely goes up.
But the offense did kind of stall out a little bit in the second half. Did they figure you guys out? Did you get too conservative? Like, if there's the only point for concern could be that though the defense was way better than expected, you would have, I thought, like, look, there, because of Tennessee last year and Pittsburgh a couple years ago, like they're gonna open up the playbook in the second half and put a 40 or a 50 spot on the Colts, and it didn't happen. What went wrong offensively in the second half?
Yeah, I mean they're pretty good too. Like I said, I mean we thought we could do some good things with the challenge that we had going up against them, and you know they made some good plays. We had some stuff on our side. You know, when you watch a film, you're kind of frustrating yourself for, you know, either lack of awareness or not taking good footwork or fundamentals. You know, typically, you know, throughout the season when we look back at things offensively and we haven't been able to execute, it usually comes back to us and doing our thing. And you know, if we're not all on the same page, you know, as an offensive line, as an offense, you know, you just need one guy off and something bad can happen and kind of breaks down the play. And then, you know, you get in the second and 13, third and 12, situations like that. And that definitely plays into the defense's hands. So, I think just, you know, kind of consistent execution, it sounds cliche, I know, but, it really just does come down to that at the end of the day. So, you know, I know we'll be working hard this week to make sure that we're able to do that every single play, because I mean, these guys coming into town, they're a pretty good bunch, and they just, so I put together their best complete game of the year as well. So it'll be a tough one.
Mitchell Schwartz joining us, All-Pro offensive lineman for the team with the best record in the AFC, the Kansas City Chiefs. What do you remember about the Patriots last time you faced them?
Well, exciting game. I mean, we left that one, you know, frustrated and lost by three. You know, they did a really good job in the first half, especially of, you know, kind of keeping us tanned down, and we had a couple turnovers. And you know, you're always obviously going up against Coach Belichick. You're going to see some stuff that you haven't seen before, and you're going to go up against, you know, schematically some things that are different. And so you're never quite sure what's going to happen. And so, you know, the work week, the preparation is really key against them, because anything can happen. You know, he's really known for those defensive game plans where something changes. You know, he takes away one guy or takes away two guys, and you got to alter your offensive game plan. So that kind of chess match between him and Coach Reed's, you know, really always the focal point of that matchup. And I mean, we score points, and you know, at the end of the day, we didn't score enough points. And you know, looking back, like I said, I think that first half is really the key. They did some really good things and prevented us from reaching our full potential in that game.
What was Pat like in comparison this Saturday to previous Thursdays and Mondays and Sundays? What was he like in that huddle?
Very similar. You know, I didn't notice anything different in terms of his demeanor, his attitude, his energy. And that's kind of the cool thing with him is, you know, he does bring an energy to the team, and he brings a, you know, the confidence and a passion. And you only see that in the positive light. I mean, there's no negativity. There's no, you know, oh, I missed a pass here or something bad happened. You know, you don't really see any slide in him. You know, saying he lost confidence. You know, there's always this, like, I don't know if it's youthful exuberance or what it is, but just the confidence that, you know, we're going to come back and make the next play. And, you know, he was locked in all week. I mean, we had a really good week of practice, and, you know, something Coach Reed's been stressing all year is everything you do on game day is going to be a byproduct of practice. And so being able to, you know, kind of dial in throughout the week, you know, I think we that led to the confidence going into the game.
Yeah, it feels like Mitchell Schwartz joining us, offensive tackle, Kansas City Chiefs. By the way, he and his brother have a book I've read. It's called Eat My Schwartz. It's about eating and family and football and faith. It's really, really cool book. You can pick it up. It's a fun read more than anything. You'll end up, I don't know if you'll laugh out loud, but you'll definitely be smiling while reading the book. It strikes me that this is one of the things about young players, and it's the same in, you know, this in college sports and in professional sports. Like, there's this window where you're still so young, you don't really understand the ramifications of everything, right? Where kind of the window, then you get to a point where you do have experience, but you also have like baggage with that experience, and you may get a little bit tight and overthink things because you understand the magnitude. Is it possible he doesn't really understand the magnitude and doesn't care, and that actually kind of works for him as opposed to the lack of experience working against him?
I think it's two things. I think, you know, part of that probably is somewhat true, and, you know, it's a second year overall, first year starting, and, you know, hey, we have the best record, we're in the AFC Championship game. This is kind of the only thing he knows as a player, you know, this level of success, and, you know, this is kind of just the way it is, and we've got another game upcoming, and, you know, doesn't really look at the bigger picture of it and kind of locked in the moment. But I think with his dad being a professional athlete and being around pro sports his whole life, you know, he's just used to kind of the athletic life, and this is the norm for him. It's you know, not weird stepping into a huddle as a 21, 22-year-old and commanding a team, because, you know, he's been around athletes his whole life. He's been around guys older than him on a professional level his whole life. And so I think there's that element that had to have helped him. I mean, his demeanor, his coolness, you know, all those things, I think he fostered that at a young age, of being able to see, you know, leaders in a clubhouse when you're a kid, and seeing, you know, 25, 35-year-old guys showing you the ropes. I think it's definitely paid dividends for him. And like you said, I mean, you can see it. You just, you know, the confidence that he displays, and he doesn't get rattled. He doesn't get fazed. He just keeps plugging away.
All right, so we're not going to – I don't know if you saw Northwestern at all this year. You ever seen those videos on social media where their strength coach, all their guys are out there like shirtless before a super cold game, like working out? Are we going to see Mitchell Schwartz like warming up next week, shirt off, you know, bare chested, working out for the game just to show that the cold doesn't bother you?
I'm just going to go ahead and say you don't want to see me shirt off regardless of the situation. So I'm going to spare social media that. You know, I don't even, at this point, I don't go out for pregame warm-up anymore. Something a few years ago I did. One of my fellow offensive linemen in Cleveland, his name is John Greco, he didn't do, you know, too much of an on-field warm-up, and we had a preseason game down in Tampa Bay, and, you know, it's August in Tampa Bay, and thunderstorms and lightning and all that, and so our whole pregame just completely got scrapped. We could only go out there for, you know, the 30 minutes right before the game, and so everyone's routine's thrown off, and I'd kind of been thinking, hey, I'm going to try to, you know, not really warm up and waste too much energy beforehand. And so I did it that game and felt great coming out of it. And honestly, I don't really go out on the field before the game unless there's someone on the other side I want to see.
Yeah, I wouldn't go out there either. Forget that. I'm going out there for the time you're paying me to go out there. Otherwise, I'll be in my trailer. Mitchell, hey, congrats on the win. Look forward to seeing you this weekend. Best of luck against the Pats.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, dude, that's Mitchell Schwartz joining us.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Every Monday, we're joined by a Super Bowl champion. His name is Trent Dilfer. He once, on the field of the Kansas City Chiefs, declared the run for the New England Patriots was over. Don't worry, we've all, you know, CBS called an election over before it was over. Dilfer's not alone, although he did not do it this time around. Others have. Trent, were so many so wrong? Was it did the Chargers choke? Was it a matchup thing? What the hell happened yesterday in Foxborough?
Well, it's very similar to when I said my idiotic statements. I don't know what year that was, 5, 6, 7 years ago in Kansas City about the Patriots being done. They looked weak. They got manhandled in Kansas City earlier in the season. They hadn't done a lot of things offensively that impressed. Tom Brady looked like he was on an island. Yada, yada, yada. So if you go to this year, I could see why people jumped on the run may be over. They looked vulnerable. They lost to four teams and didn't make the playoffs. That's never happened before. You saw Tom Brady make uncharacteristic mistakes throughout the course of the season. The defense got shredded at times. So, you know, you could see why people could make those assumptions. Now, I learned from my stupid comments years ago that they do a lot of things in the regular season to prepare for the real season, which is the postseason to them. They will do some things schematically. They will test out some personnel. They'll take some chances on some personnel. They're still trying to win, but what they're really trying to do is make sure they're playing their best football in December and January. And through all of it this year, I kept saying, you're going to see more James White. When they get into playoff time, you're going to see them get the ball out of their hand quicker, less deep play action plays, more ball your hand plays. You're going to see them run on the edges. You're going to see Tom Brady controlling the run game a little bit more at the line of scrimmage. You'll see them change their tempo up a little bit more. And that's everything that happened yesterday. It was as surgical as performance as I've seen in a long time by Tom Brady, not just throwing the ball. He's also dictating terms of the line of scrimmage in the run game. And when you saw him double cadencing, when you saw him get to the line of scrimmage and wait and see what the defense was doing, he was finding the softest edge, and he was getting the ball to the runner on the edge, eating up those light defensive ends and getting up to those dime linebackers that the Chargers tried to play with. And it was just complete mastery of a game plan, and it was an offensive system that he prefers more than the one they experimented with in the regular season, where it was kind of a heavy inside run action game plan.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, but now that the Kansas City has seen what they're going to do in the postseason, doesn't that put on tape who the Patriots really are and make this week even more difficult?
Yeah, but the Patriots can be more, too. You know, that's the thing about them. They can, yes, I think that'll be the foundation of their offense, and Kansas City now sees that, and they're going to have an answer for James White coming out of the backfield on the quick-hitting stuff, and they're going to have an answer for Edelman eating up the middle of the field, and they'll be aware of some of that stuff. But what you haven't seen is a heavy dose of Gronk recently either, and he definitely looked fresher yesterday, and it was mainly as a blocker, but that doesn't mean he can't do it as a receiver. They have other weapons. They know how to expose where you're weak. And let's not forget, although Kansas City's looked a lot better since the Chargers game in week 15 defensively, so week 16, 17, and 18. I know people are going to say, well, the Seahawks put 38 up on them. But you saw signs of the physicality in their defense. They're still a statistically poor defense, and they do have a lot of holes, and I think New England will be able to expose those holes.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What went so wrong for the Colts and Andrew Luck?
Am I crazy, or did they just look cold and slow?
Yep.
Was that okay? Good. I'm glad somebody else has a good eye. I mean, I was telling my wife and my daughter, I'm like, I never really buy into the cold stuff, but they look cold. They looked tentative and didn't want contact, and they weren't moving fast. I think the easy way to say it is this dome team that went and played in bad conditions. It's not uncommon. I think they weren't prepared mentally for it as much as anything. It did not look like the Colts team of the last 6 or 7 weeks from a confidence standpoint, from a speed standpoint, or from a physicality standpoint.
Trent Dilfer joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. There were people last week because of all the hires saying, you know, all these Sean McVay guys are, you know, this, you know, it's too much. And I tried to explain to people, McVay's more than a play caller. There's a lot more he does than just work with Jared Goff. On the other hand, like, there was a certain virtuoso to what they were able to do. How were they able to so manhandle the Cowboys, especially those Cowboys linebackers?
Well, I think it's really what they want to be. Let's not forget Sean McVay's deepest roots are with the Shanahans. And Mike Shanahan, even more than Kyle, loved running the football and play actioning. Actually spent very little time on the drop back pass game. It was about run and run action. Kyle, who's one of the great young offensive minds in all of football, is the same way. He's a run action guy. And I think Sean's roots are that he wants to run the football. He wants to run it down people's throats, and then he wants to strike with the big play with the passing game. I think there was probably a period of time in there where he got a little pass happy. I wouldn't disagree with that, but Jared Goff was also playing great. And you want to be able to show, you want to be able to put on tape a lot of dimensions. So it's hard to prepare against you. I think he got back to his roots as much as anything. I think the bye week really helped them. I think it helped the coaching staff. I saw the article written this morning where some of their players on offense said they found some cues by the Cowboys defensive linemen, guessing which stunts they were going to be in and kind of predicting what they were going to be doing defensively. That's a huge advantage that usually comes with even a deeper dive into the film where the bye week can help you with that. But I think this is who they want to be. At their core, I think they want to be a team that controls the tempo of the game by running the ball, force you into recruiting extra people to line of scrimmage, and then create one-on-ones in the back end.
What about the Cowboys? Did they not throw it as much as they should have because that's not who they are? Is it because they don't trust Dak, or is it because their play calling was awful?
Well, I mean, I didn't like the play calling. I'm not an anti-Scott Linehan guy by any stretch of the imagination, but it was almost like they looked at the stat sheet and said, okay, they're bad against the run, so we're just going to be stubborn with the run. And you can't do it that way. A lot of the great running teams, when teams know they want to run the ball, will actually come out and show you other stuff, get you out of your comfort zone and make you think that you're going to have to defend a bunch of other stuff today, and then run it down your throat. I personally thought that was a game they should have come out and been a little more aggressive in the passing game. And I don't mean throwing it down the field, just getting the ball creative ways to Cooper and Ezekiel out of the backfield. And Jarwin, the tight end, has been, you know, really good for them late in the season. I thought there were some matchups there. The other thing, too, and I think it was with you, we talked about this weeks ago, Wade Phillips' Achilles heel on defense has always been linebackers, tight ends matched up in the passing game. For as long as he's been a coordinator in this league, that's where the really good offensive minds have attacked him. I was shocked that there wasn't more Elliott out of the backfield, Jarwin matched up on backers, multi tight end sets getting them matched up on backers. I was really surprised that was not the game plan. And I think they could have had a little momentum, more momentum early on if they would have attacked that way.
Okay, so we'll get to what that means, because that feels like a massive mismatch when you're taking on the Saints, because they attack those linebackers with Alvin Kamara in the passing game. But let's get to the Saints. They're down 14-0, a couple big explosive plays from the Eagles. And look, we just had Cam Jordan on. They shut down the Eagles without Sheldon Rankins, who's had an outstanding year for them. How are they able to shut down the Eagles?
I think Colin said this morning, as you watched Colin's show this morning, I thought he said it perfectly. And when he asked me about it, I said, well, you gave the answer earlier in the show. I think the Saints, and you know it hurts me to give Colin that much credit, by the way, but I think the Saints are very different than what people perceive them to be. I think at their core, they are a tough, physical, defensive-minded, hard-nosed, mentally resilient football team that has the ability to have some flash and sizzle when needed. But we all remember early in the season when Drew Brees throwing 80% and they're lighting up the scoreboard, and yet teams are still getting organized on defense. what they've really done a nice job of is shortening the game, controlling it with the run game, sharing carries between Ingram and Kamara, and then throwing some Taysom Hill in at you, and then trusting Drew Brees to be Hall of Fame Drew Brees when that formula doesn't work. And I've always said this about Hall of Fame quarterbacks. There's no doubt that the safest way to play football is by having a high volume of runs, play good defense, play good special teams. The problem with that formula a lot of times is you sequester your quarterback. You don't allow him to be as good as he could be. However, I've always felt like when you have a Hall of Fame quarterback, why not trust him to be a Hall of Fame quarterback and get you out of jams if you're going to take a more conservative approach to pounding the rock at people? And that's kind of what they did. They said, okay, we're going to shut him down on defense because we're tough on defense. You saw they played a lot of tight coverage. I mean, they really were all over the Eagles' wide receivers. And then offensively, they just said, we're going to be patient. We know this is the way we play. We're going to run the ball. We're going to be physical. And then we're going to trust Drew and Thomas to make some plays to get us out of jams. And they didn't disappoint.
How did Foles play?
He played okay. He made a couple really nice throws early. But then after that, I thought he was kind of tentative with some balls. They had a lot of one-on-ones. Like I said, the Saints were really aggressive in their coverage schemes. And he had some one-on-ones and egregiously underthrew some of them. Now, I know they kind of want a softer ball, more of a 50-50 ball. That's part of their perimeter passing game. But I thought he pulled the string a couple times, is a term we use as quarterbacks, when you're not fully decisive on your throw. I thought he pulled the string on some throws. Nick is a guy, and I'm a Nick fan, but he's a guy that likes zones. He wants to throw the ball versus zones. He wants to get it out of his hands, throw it in between zone defenders, layer it over zone defenders, throw it early in zones. He struggles in the tight man-to-man stuff, and I think they knew that. The Saints knew that, and that's what he got, a large dose of those tight man-to-man coverage schemes as the game wore on, and he did not play great against them.
Yeah, and then he still had a chance, and Alshon drops that football. I mean, we've seen this before. We've seen this minutes, and I guess he only had two true drops this year, but he did drop a ball that would have putting them right into the red zone. And it's really amazing how this happens, right? Like, I think we'd all agree Foles is just okay. They have 14-0 lead, and they can't put any points on the board. And then because Alshon drops a ball that he 99 times in 100 catches and gets a first down, suddenly now it's Alshon Jeffrey lost the game, and it wasn't that Nick Foles wasn't really good enough to score enough points.
It wasn't on Alshon Jeffrey. Now, again, it's a horrible mistake, one that he owns right after the game, as he should. But, yeah, I think I'm with you on this one. I don't think Nick did not play championship-level football by any stretch of the imagination. When you put up 14 early, like you said, you at least got to move the ball consistently during the game and get some field goals, flip the field, pin the Saints back, whatever. It's not always about putting 40 on the board. But, yeah, I thought he did not play very well in some critical downs and, like I said, was pretty indecisive with some of his throws.
That's the voice of Trent Dilfer. He joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. All right, let's fast forward here. You mentioned the weakness to Wade Phillips' defense is in their linebackers in coverage traditionally. That seems to set up well for the Saints. The Saints have seen them. On the other hand, like the Rams seem to have regained some of their confidence, some of their swagger, especially on that offensive line. And if you give Jared Goff time, he's been really good. On a Monday, games on a Sunday, who do you like?
Well, I bet my buddy weeks ago the Rams, so I kind of got to stick with that. But what do I really think? I think it's a really tough matchup for the Rams, for what we said about Wade Phillips. Now, he has evolved a little bit. He's playing some more zone. Peters has forced him to play a little more zone because Peters is not a get-up-in-your-face, man-to-man guy, never has been. So Wade's had to adapt and play more zone. But when it's go time. In the biggest plays of the game, Wade always calls one of three defenses. He's been doing it forever. He's either going to rush five, play man with no help in the back end, just a whole safety. He's going to walk out a linebacker and another one to the edge and blitz them and play man. Or he's going to play a tight match zone. All three of those expose your safety and linebackers to running back and tight end mismatches. And that's, again, this goes, you know, Wade was coaching when I played. This is 14 years of playing. This is 9 years of being an analyst, watching it every single year, that it's a, he's a great coordinator and it's a great system. But you go and you find the really good offensive minds, and it's clockwork. They will always attack those coverages with running back and tight end matchups. So and Sean Payton knows this. You know, Sean Payton's forgot more football than I'll ever know, so he knows this as well. So I look for these critical moments. It's not going to be all game. You know what I mean? This isn't fantasy football where, okay, now Kamara's going to catch 15 balls and the tight end's going to catch 9. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying in the downs where everybody knows, okay, this is a big down. Mm-hmm. I get this. This is one of these downs that's going to change the game. I can promise you what Wade's going to play, and I can promise you what Sean Payton is going to call. And those are going to be the 6 to 8 plays in the game that are going to decide the game. And I'd give the advantage to the Saints.
All right, everybody, counted the. We've seen them lose on this field before, but as you pointed out, like there's more to the Patriots than even they've shown. On the other hand, there is a lack of playmaker on that defensive side of the ball. No matter how good they are against the run, there's just a lack of a playmaker and sometimes an inability to put pressure on a good offensive line for the Kansas City Chiefs. Who do you like in what's going to be frigid Kansas City?
It's going to be interesting. I'm pretty confident how Bill will call this game defensively, that they're going to dare Kansas City to run the ball. They're going to want Kansas City to run the ball over and over and over again and try to kick field goals. They're not going to try to stop them in the middle of the field. They're going to try to prevent Patrick Mahomes from going off and make these highlight reel plays. So I think Kansas City moves the ball rather easily throughout this game. It's going to come down to how they finish drives. And this is a guy that was one of the most prolific touchdown throwers in the history of our game. He's going to have to throw the ball across the goal line to beat the Patriots, which is the hardest job in football. I just learned by being an idiot years ago not to bet against the Patriots this time of year. You just don't. They are intellectually superior to everybody they play. They teach the game of football better than anybody teaches it. I think it comes this time of year, and it's your football IQ, it's your technique, it's your toughness, it's your grit. It's those are the things that win more than playmaking. And I think that that's why the Patriots continue to win this time of the year, because that's what they emphasize.
Yeah.
They're not about flash and sizzle. They're about substance, and they do substance better than anybody's ever done it. And for that reason, I can't pick against them. I think they go up there, and I think it becomes a one-possession game at the end, and Tom Brady wins it.
Awesome stuff. Trent Dilfer, Super Bowl champion. Follow him on Twitter, at Dilfer's Dimes. He gives great analysis there, as well as joining us on our and Colin show. Thanks so much for joining us, dude.
Thanks, buddy.